Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Harvey Coppell to the broadcast. Harvey is Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. In this capacity, Harvey sets the center's strategy and directs internal and external operations, and also serves as chairman of the center's advisory committee. Prior to his current role, Harvey served as Chief Information Officer of Citigroup's Global Consumer Group, or GCG. In that role, Harvey set strategic direction for the GCG's operations and technology and actively supported the development and growth of the operations and technology community across all GCG lines of business globally. Prior to taking on the CIO role, Harvey provided consulting services to City Financial, Citibank, and other City affiliates, and he was heavily involved in supporting the planning and integration of many of City's major acquisitions, including Travelers Insurance, Associates First Capital, European American Bank, and Golden State Bank. Harvey's been involved in many innovations, including the first graphical user interface for the NASDAQ Trader Workstation, FXNet, a software program that revolutionized the way large financial institutions manage settlement risk with FX portfolios, the development of the Maestro platform at City Financial, and Harvey is also the named inventor on the Citibank patent of the Recommendation Engine, a software component that advises sales and service staff about products and services to discuss with clients based upon their financial goals and objectives. Harvey has a bachelor's degree in psychology and computer science from the University of Pittsburgh. I recently caught up with Harvey in his office in New York City, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed the governance methods he's used in the past as he's led IT behemoths, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed the trend of IT leaders leading innovation activities within the organization, as well as the need for CIOs to be both business savvy and proactive in their interactions with colleagues outside of IT, as well as some other topics. Harvey Coppell, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter. It is absolutely my pleasure to be here today with you.
Thank you. Well, Harvey, for those who may not be familiar with it, could you take a moment to describe the Center for CIO Leadership?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The center was actually created in the fourth quarter of 2007. It grew out of research that was done by IBM together with Harvard Business School and MIT Sloan Scissor, to really address the need that was surfaced at the time, and frankly, I believe still very much a real need, which was how can we help CIOs to essentially become better business people, really all geared around ensuring that the use of IT and the return on the IT investment is maximized towards delivering business value and driving sustainable revenue in addition to reducing expenses on a year-over-year basis.
Excellent. And we'll talk about it in a moment, the fact that you are yourself a former CIO, and I'd love to get some of your perspectives from your past experience in that role. But in light of your experience as an IT leader previously, and now in your current role with the many interactions you have with some of the world's most influential IT leaders, what are some of the topics that have risen to the top of their priority list in your mind?
Well, interestingly enough, Peter, I think the topic have changed somewhat over the last several years, I think largely as a result of the economic downturn that we hopefully are now coming out of. Some have stayed the same, but some new ones have really emerged, I believe, over the last couple of years. Ones that have been fairly consistent have been largely around how CIOs can play more diverse leadership roles across the enterprise. The way we describe it at the Center for CIO Leadership is transforming their roles from that of manager of the IT cost center, very operational, very tactical focus, Of course, looking at expense reduction always as a key component, but really helping to make the journey, as we describe it, to become business leaders. So leadership, things like business strategy and process, innovation and growth, organization and talent management have been on the table over the last few years as really significant challenges facing CIOs, many of which who have grown up in the IT organizations and in many cases really didn't need to develop the kinds of leadership skills or perhaps even the organizational development skills that we're talking about used to be described as kind of the quote softer skills unquote. And now what we're finding is that in this new world where CIOs are being called upon more and more often by CEOs and other C-suite members to play more and more important roles in helping shape the business strategy, those kinds of skills, the interpersonal skills, are less and less soft skills, but becoming absolutely mandatory. In direct response to coming out of the economic downturn, what we're also finding are things like being able to understand who the customer is and, in particular, leveraging business intelligence and analytics to drive customer-centric and customer-focused kinds of programs has emerged as a major challenge and opportunity for CIOs. Another big one, not surprisingly, coming out of the economic downturn as we enter what many people call the new normal environment, is a renewed focus was always there, but I think has now really been escalated into probably the top three or four on CIOs' minds. Risk management and compliance very much involved in the safety and soundness of the enterprise overall.
That's interesting, Harvey. As I hear you talk and as I think about the period in which the Center for CIO Leadership has been in place and therefore this period in which you've had these rich interactions with a whole range of IT leaders, you mentioned that traditionally CIOs have been managers of a cost center. As downturns naturally turn corporations' focus to cost reductions, how have you seen CIOs navigate their way through the potential risk of being pushed back into the box towards cost centricity?
It's a great question and one that we talk about all the time with our CIO community and the subject of a lot of research that we do. In many cases, I think during the period of the downturn, clearly there was a renewed, very, very strong focus on expense reduction, cost control, streamlining operations, operational efficiency, operational excellence, much more so than before. What I think also the CIOs that really understood the opportunity, and I think this is probably as much a statement about the enterprise or the cultures that CIOs work within across the C-suite in particular, because this is not something that CIOs can do single-handedly, but I think that where there was a, for competitive reasons or for growth reasons, the opportunity to leverage IT in some of the more innovative and strategic ways, one of the techniques that we saw being really honed and in many cases fine-tuned was the whole notion of self-funding a lot of innovative and strategic types of programs. For example, traditionally, before the downturn occurred, a major program might be, how do we take our 8 data centers and consolidate and virtualize and essentially re-engineer our infrastructure based on a 2 or 3 data center model, thereby saving the operating cost associated with the remaining 5 or 6 data centers, which obviously was a considerable savings. Often that savings would go right back to the business, right back to the bottom line, so to speak. And what we were seeing during the downturn itself was more and more of a tendency for that savings to be shared between IT and their business counterparts, where some percentage of that savings could then be reinvested in some more of the strategic or more innovative technologies. So working on a mobile application would be an interesting example. Again, another, I think, emerging technology that we're starting to see coming out of the downturn related to this trend. What we are definitely seeing is, in many ways, an extension and an evolution of the meaning of innovation itself. Literally, we're seeing CEOs more and more demanding of their organizations innovation around what we describe as business model or operating model. So it's gone well beyond how do we create a better widget or how do we use a mobile device to do inventory control, which of course are still very, very important aspects and very key strategic enablers of much business. But equally important, I think in many ways, perhaps even more important from a business perspective, we're seeing the demand on enterprises to become more global as one example. So it's a fundamental shift in business model. It's a return to basics. It's a renewed focus on what are our core competencies as an enterprise and how do we ensure that the right resources, the right management focus, the right talent, the right budgets are focused on those things that are core competencies that really differentiate us from the competition versus those activities that we do that for all intents and purposes really are commoditized or really could be either done by a partner in either an outsourced model or a collaborative business partnership model. And what's really interesting to us is in many cases, the CIO is really in the catbird seat in terms of having the opportunity to lead these kinds of re-engineering, if I can use that term, at the level of the business model. This goes beyond just the business process, but really looking at how do we help the enterprise transform itself from local or regional to a global model. And it's one of the things that's very clearly come out of this new normal environment is, almost no enterprise no longer has the luxury or the ability to operate on a purely local basis, whether it be where the market is, or where the labor pool is, or where the supply chain is, or where natural resources are coming from. Almost every business in every industry in every geography is now more and more dependent on, I hate to use the word offshore, I don't think it's even about offshore, it's about non-local resources. And so what we're seeing now is that because CIOs are really amongst the very few C-level executives that have an end-to-end view of the entire model or processes that support the model, literally from customer to ledger, in many cases, it's the CIO who is ideally positioned to support the C-suite in helping to understand what this new business model and what these supporting business processes need to be in order to, in effect, innovate their business model to focus more, for example, on the core competency, which may have to do with the design of the shirt and the sales and distribution of the shirt, but less concerned with where do we buy the cotton and how do we get the gray dyed into the appropriate color or the designed into the appropriate pattern. Let's figure out how to partner with somebody that may be on the other side of the world to do that on our behalf. We can drive down the cost of that part of our process, which really doesn't differentiate us, and really focus our time and energy and money and best resources on the marketing and distribution of a competitive product. So very, very interesting opportunities for CIOs here to really step up into these leadership roles, but clearly they need to have the right skills, the right competencies to be able to have the right conversations with their CEOs and their CMOs and their CFOs in order to play effective leadership roles in these kinds of transformations. Very much emphasized by this new normal environment that we're experiencing now.
It's interesting, Harvey, as I hear that very rich answer and think about what it suggests regarding the evolution of the role of the CIO. I'm hearing you say that CIOs are essentially becoming, to a much greater extent, business leaders, a specific kind of business leader, but are going from less sort of the traditional techies and more towards integrators, people who can see across the organization and potentially connect or read the tea leaves in ways that the various silo leaders can't themselves. And I wonder, if I'm interpreting that correctly, what does that mean in terms of kinds of skills that the CIOs are going to need to have? For instance, is there going to be that balance between technical know-how versus business savviness? Is the scale tipping in one direction versus another?
Oh, I definitely think it is, Peter. I think it is definitely tipping towards the business savvy side of the equation. Again, not to say that CIOs don't need to have the technical skills. And actually, perhaps technical skills is not even a good characterization. Perhaps what the business savvy CIO, as we refer to the role as, is somebody that certainly understands the business side of things. More importantly, understands the capabilities and the opportunities that can be leveraged and created through the innovative use of technology in order to help drive the business agenda. So they need to be able to understand both, but they don't have to necessarily be the one that knows the difference between the blue server or the green server or the pink server.
That's very interesting, Harvey. I think I'd like to actually also explore a little bit further, kind of what do you see separating leading CIOs from average CIOs? And as you formulate your response, I'd also be interested in your thoughts about whether this is something that the CIO, him or herself, can initiate this sort of thinking, or whether leading CIOs tend to operate within organizations where the invitation is extended by the business. So in other words, if a CIO is operating in an organization that for whatever reason has not historically had an appreciation of IT, are there some things that the best CIOs can do that can climb the rungs towards the level of performance that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a great question again, and really gets right the sweet spot of what the Center for CIO Leadership does. First of all, I think that the CIOs themselves do have to be quite proactive in demonstrating both the value of the IT function as well as their own personal capabilities. It's really all about developing credibility and trust across the C-suite. What we hear it described as kind of having a seat at the table compared to having a voice at the table. So the seat at the table kind of comes along with the C in your title by virtue of the fact that you're a chief level person, you're sitting at the management table, and that's kind of a given in most situations. What is different, and I think what really separates the high performing CIOs from the less high performing CIOs is, as we describe it, the voice at the table. So, and by that what we mean is, how effective can you be in participating in the business strategy conversation? And in fact, that's one of the kind of the acid tests that we apply to see whether the CIO truly is functioning in a business savvy kind of context, which, you know, represents for us, I think, the archetype or the role that we would like to see more and more CIOs playing. And for me, and certainly this is, I think, very true of my own personal experience, it was all about being invited into the business strategy conversation, not because you had a C in your title, but because your C-suite partners absolutely believed and got that your participation in that conversation was going to add value, plain and simple, that you could have the conversation, not about virtualization, not about whether we have two data centers or three data centers, not about reliability and availability or five nines or any of that stuff. Frankly, doing that stuff today is table stakes. And that's what it takes to be a master of in order to earn the seat at the table, right? But it's really going beyond that and being able to have the right business conversation to engage with the CFO around how the IT assets on the balance sheet can be best leveraged to drive business strategy. How can this particular program that IT is working on in collaboration with the business drive revenue? How do we drive enhanced customer satisfaction? This is obviously not just with the CFO. This could be with the CEO or with the CMO, all across the executive management of the enterprise. But it's having that business conversation. So, you know, again, it's not about the tool. It's about the outcome, where the outcome is clearly stated and discussed in business terms. Those are the right conversations to have. And what we see is those CIOs that are the most successful are able to have that conversation and then at the same time have the appropriate bench strength and the appropriate support so that they know that while they're in the meeting with their business partners, if, you know, heaven help us, there's a problem with the email system or there's a problem with the network, the people that work for them will have that covered. And, you know, that's what really generates the trust and the credibility and the confidence. Because, you know, often what we see is a scenario where CIOs will come up with great ideas for innovation or for some kind of strategic roadmap or plan or the best new widget or whatever it may be, and simply don't get funding. In fact, based on our research, what we have found is something like 85% of CIOs feel that they have been very proactive about coming up with great new innovative ideas, but the number of CIOs that say they actually get funding for those ideas falls way back to somewhere around 65%. And what we believe is that what accounts for that gap is partly they don't have the skills to have the right conversation, but partly, you know, it's, I think, just human nature. It's like, you know, don't come talk to me about all this leading edge stuff if you can't even get the basics right. So it's really both. It's really both.
Well, Harvey, it's no coincidence that you're a natural in your current role. And as you're describing the successful CIOs and the skills they need, I know from your reputation that you need only look in the mirror to see an IT executive with those very characteristics. You're a former CIO yourself, as I mentioned, having been the CIO of Citigroup's global consumer group. In that role, I know you led a massive team and had a budget that reflected that. I wonder if you can talk a bit about that past experience, perhaps make some of the stories you've just told a bit more real through your own experience as to how you went about the process of governing such a large organization from a people, prioritization, strategy, budgeting perspective, and so on.
Happy to. I think for me, it was all about first starting with engaging the business in understanding what their challenges and opportunities were all about. In the case of Citi, clearly it was a very diverse spectrum of business goals and objectives. As most of our listeners probably are aware, Citi grew quite dramatically through merger and acquisition. So there were many aspects of the role that were quite tactical. The business strategy may have been about growing through acquisition, but from an IT agenda perspective, there's not a whole lot of strategy around how are we going to paste Company A and Company B together in service of creating a better Company C. And so there was really kind of an interesting balance between a lot of the strategic business objectives and the IT plans and goals and objectives. There was also a fair amount of strategic work going on, in particular in the Global Consumer Group, which I was involved with, that had to do with really creating a global footprint, complete with business operating model, as well as the technology and operations platforms that supported that business model. So, for example, one of the things that we were working on outside of North America was common platforms that supported banking and credit cards, which were the two major products that were supported by the consumer bank outside of North America. When I originally stepped into the role, by the way, the consumer group, just to put this in context, was doing business in 54 countries, served about 150 million customers across those 54 countries, and North America had its own set of platforms, essentially by line of business. And then once you got outside of North America into Europe or Asia or Middle East or Africa or Latin America, South America, each region had its own platforms, and often each country had its own platforms. And just tremendous inefficiencies, partly from an operating point of view, but also from a customer perspective. And I think that was another key that enabled me to connect with the business very solidly very early on, was frankly an intense focus, if not literally an obsession, with who our customers were, what our value proposition was to those customers, how to continually enhance our product and service offerings to our customers. And part of that, Citi being a global franchise, very key was being able to walk into a branch in one country and conduct business and then go to another branch in another country and be able to conduct the same business or even different business, but be recognized as a customer of Citi, not necessarily associated with that branch or even that country, from a customer experience perspective. And so a lot of the focus that I created across the IT world was driven very specifically by the business objective of creating a truly global experience for the customers. And so we very quickly created a roadmap, which was really used as the basis for having the business conversation about where the goals and objectives were, and making sure we had the right priorities in place from a business perspective, and then at the same time took that roadmap and translated it into the implications for IT and operations, and were then able to ensure that there was alignment. And frankly, for me, it went way beyond alignment. It was really about integration, if you can understand a subtle but important difference here. It wasn't about taking two disparate things and making them somehow synchronized, but rather integrating both the IT and operations into the business in a way that IT was simply part of the business. And again, ensuring that there was safety and soundness, that the operation worked smoothly, that the day-to-day activities were properly taken care of, which both freed me up, gave me the time, but also established the credibility that I needed and the trust that I needed to be able to talk to the various heads of business and the CEOs at the regional level, to be able to even be part of the business conversations, to understand where the challenges were and where the growth opportunities were, to again ensure that the IT agendas were carefully orchestrated to ensure the right level of support. Significant focus on making sure we had the right bench strength. Clearly, when you're doing things that are very operationally intense, very tactical in nature, different skill sets required from when you were doing the first mobile banking application, where you're essentially pioneering new products and services on a new technology. So, and frankly, that mix changed depending on what year it was, depending on what market we were in, depending on what geography we were in. And it was really, frankly, not about being strategic or tactical. It was not about being creative and innovative or looking to cut costs. It was always an end, and it was always about what's the right balance and what's the right mix for this business environment for this time, and then making sure that the bench strength that was applied was appropriate to those kinds of business challenges, and therefore coming up with the right technical solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Harvey, one last question for you. As you've had a chance to, again, have all these conversations, participate in a whole range of forums, I wonder what trends do you see that are kind of rising that are particularly exciting to you as you look into your crystal ball a few years out in the future?
Oh, I think there's a lot of really, really interesting stuff happening in our industry that represent very, very exciting opportunities, a couple of different ones. One is, I think, the whole proliferation of broadband and mobile computing, I think, is enormous. I think that what that's creating is global access, is the beginning of the holy grail of technology, which is all about anything, any place, anytime, especially in some of the growth markets, but even in the developed markets, in outlying areas, in rural areas where, you know, people simply couldn't have access to the internet, or if they did, it was on dial-up, I think is just going to be an enormous trend for both business, as well as just affecting the quality of people's lives. On that topic, I think another enormous trend is what a lot of people are calling consumerization, which is the emergence of technologies in the personal or consumer space that are finding their way back into the business world, which is actually a reversal of historically how IT has worked and how technology has evolved. Typically, things like the personal computer, as a perfect example, generally driven by economics, just simply the cost of the technology, have been adopted in the business environment first, and then over time, as prices have dropped and power has increased, they have found their way into the consumer space. I think what is happening now is a reversal of that trend, where many newer technologies are starting in the consumer space, probably things like Facebook or some of the social networks or social media kinds of technologies are perfect examples where these things are really starting out in the consumer environment and are finding their way back into businesses, which really, I think, will have enormous impact both on the businesses themselves as the newer generation of IT workers and enterprise workers overall enter the workplace. People are just going to assume that, you know, of course the internet is there, and of course I can communicate via Facebook. I mean, you know, things like email, in many cases, when I talk to my 18-year-old kid, he says email's for old people. He's using text messaging and Facebook and Skype and, you know, having online video chats with his friends all around the world for free. You know, and little by little, I think these kinds of technologies are finding their way into the workplace, and in many cases, by the way, are creating very, very interesting challenges for CIOs, who traditionally have been very, very concerned with things that are behind the firewall or in front of the firewall, and looking at information security and data privacy and what leaves the company through what means. And of course, as more and more people start to use these social media and social networking kinds of technologies, that challenge becomes greater and greater and greater. Frankly, in some contexts, and I can certainly relate to this again, going back to my prior experience as a CIO, I mean, being out of control of a technology is every CIO's worst nightmare, you know, very simply put. But at this point, these technologies have proliferated to such an extent that I think industry and CIOs in particular no longer have the luxury of ignoring them. I think they need to be embraced, and the issues around security and privacy and scalability and, you know, all the things that make for a safety and sound operation are going to need to be figured out and solved, as opposed to if we ignore it long enough, maybe it'll go away. I think there's another trend, by the way, that kind of brings all of this together, which is probably a little further out, although I think is happening at a very, very rapid pace, is a reversal of the role of data versus application. And by that, what I mean is traditionally, most commercial enterprises defined themselves by their business processes and the applications, which in effect were IT instantiations of the business process. We often see data clearly as important, but in many ways almost subordinate to the application. It was the application that came first and then the data that was needed in order to support the application. And what we're starting to see, especially in the mobile space, especially in the internet space, especially in the social media space, a reversal of this trend where definitely we're starting to see the emergence of data where the application then gets built. A lot of this, by the way, is being driven in the public sector as a result of transparency in government, but also with many of the new risk management and compliance regulations at the private sector level, much more about transparency. But let me give you a perfect example that brings all of this together. And these are actual conversations. I can't quite attribute sources, unfortunately, without appropriate permission. But, you know, if I go and I talk to CIOs in Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies, and I talk to them about what innovative new things they're doing in business intelligence, as an example, often I will hear anecdotes about how we're taking 8 data warehouses and consolidating into 1 data warehouse, and we're saving $50 million a year by doing that, and at the same time we are shortening the length of time it takes us to close our books at the end of the quarter from 45 days to 5 days, and our finance people are just in heaven, and our business performance reporting is bigger and better than it's ever been, and our board is delighted, and our auditors are delighted, and we are just slamming that ball out of the park. When I go speak to CIOs in little and perhaps not so little companies in some of the growth market countries, I'm hearing a very different story. What I'm hearing is, gee, you know, we're not really worried about consolidating data warehouses because we haven't built them yet. So, you know, we don't have the legacy systems that we need to streamline or make more efficient. What we're working on is trying to figure out how to data mine 10 million tweets per minute to get a sense of what's selling and what's not selling in our retail stores, and feeding that information in real time to the sales staff in the store so they know what to push and what to pull off the shelf. Completely different approach to how data is viewed, how it's being manipulated, and frankly, the value of it. And, you know, some of it is about real time versus not, but I think more to the point, it's about starting with the data and figuring out how to leverage the technologies to exploit the real value of the data. In a way, it's just a fundamentally different approach to the use of data, to the use of IT, and ultimately the impact that can be made on the business.
Excellent. Well, Harvey Coppell, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your perspectives. What a rich conversation. It was fantastic to get a clearer sense for the sorts of conversations you're having with the many IT leaders that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, as well as to learn from your own experience as an IT leader in your own right. So thank you for taking this time with us.
My pleasure, Peter. Glad to be able to have this interview with you today.
You've just just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on world-class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.